Production. Recorded live.
And I heard another voice from heaven saying, "Come out of her, my people, that ye be not partakers of her sins, and that ye receive not of her plagues. For her sins have reached unto heaven, and God hath remembered her iniquities." Fellow Adamites, we are seeing the cracks emerge in Babylon. We are seeing the cracks spread. I don't believe it will be too long now before we hear Babylon the Great is fallen. And Yahweh willing, we shall all be there to witness it, and all the world shall bear witness to the power of Yahweh. If you have not begun to prepare for the things which are to come, the things which you already started to see happen, then you'd best do so now. Now is the time to make preparations, gather supplies, make plans, and focus your efforts to keep on the straight and narrow path. Be right with the Heavenly Father, and he shall bring you through the plagues that await this doomed nation. Today is May 2nd, 2010, Sunday, and Bill Fink is with us for the fourth and what may prove to be the final installment of the Spanish Civil War, Bolshevism in Spain. How are you doing tonight, sir?
Hello, praise Yahweh.
Absolutely, praise Yahweh. And when last we left off, we were going to get into General Franco, having established the conditions necessary for the Bolshevik revolt to come about, how they basically lobbied incessantly for the monarchy to collapse, and the king, hoping to spare his nation bloodshed and turmoil, resigned and basically abdicated, fled the country. And then they brought in a weak transitional government that they intended to only be temporary under the auspices of a democratic republic. And this government was purposely weak, so it would give rise to anarchy. And then from the ensuing anarchy, they plunged the entire nation into the chaos of a civil war, hoping to have a huge communist power grab.
Just like they pulled in Bolshevik Russia, in Russia in 1917. Well, 1905 to 1917. I'm sorry, go on.
I was going to say they simply weren't counting on Franco. He was the one variable they hadn't factored into the equation.
Well, right, just like they didn't count on an Adolf Hitler. Just like they tried to take over Germany, they thought they had it in 1919. And they didn't count on a free corps.
They darn well near had it, though.
Well, yes, they did. They came a hell of a lot closer in Germany than they came in Spain. And the Bolshevik Revolution in Spain, and that's what the Spanish Civil War really is, it started before 1931. And in 1931, they thought they had it.
In Italy, had it not been for Mussolini, Italy could have been the next Soviet country.
And all of my formative years, I heard nothing but bad things about Franco in the American press and in American history books, and in Anglo history books, I should say.
They're all
written
by communists.
And you will, even today, you'll hear nothing but bad things about Franco. You'll hear nothing but the human rights violations, the atrocities that were caused by Franco and his followers, and. We never hear about the human rights violations and the atrocities that came out of the Soviet Union from 1917 to 19. Well, they're probably still going on. But.
Communists are always portrayed in romantic terms, though, aren't they? They're guardians of the workers.
All the time. And that's what we have to realize, is that we have been – that this war was lost. We lost this war when we turned – when we handed our minds over to the Jewish-controlled media almost 100 years ago, that's when we lost this war. When Christians handed their minds over to the Jew, so that the Jew who had bought up Hollywood, the Jew who had controlled most of our major newspapers by the 1940s, the Jew who controlled all of our television and radio by the 1940s or 50s, so that the Jew could just pour bucket after bucket of garbage into our brains.
And they've done that.
The media and the newspapers.
And they're very adept at doing that, aren't they?
Yes, they have. And every a generation, two generations, three generations of Americans grew up believing Franco, evil. Hitler, evil. Stalin, good. Hitler, evil. Stalin, good.
Well,
that's incredible.
What Besmianov said. He said that three generations of Americans were receiving Marxism-Leninism without actually receiving any contrary opinions of genuine Americanism. He said that nobody was opposing it.
No,
the indoctrination
drowned them out.
Of all the generations.
The media drowned them out. You can't. The only holdout that I know of, the only holdout to the Jewish control over the media through World War II was perhaps. Perhaps, I say, because I really, haven't read every editorial, the Chicago Tribune and Colonel McCormick, right? The only major newspaper that held out against that or that tried to hold one against that.
Well, there was Charles Coughlin and some others, but they were all put in prison for sedition.
Well, yes, there was a great sedition trial in World War II, and very few people know about that today. And the opposition, the anti-war opposition in under the Roosevelt administration was crushed by the power of the government.
Yet the anti-war opposition from the Vietnam era, they're glorified and romanticized.
Well, it's what the Jew wants. We've done what the Jew wanted us to destroy Nazi Germany, and we did, and anybody who spoke out against it was punished. The Jew wanted to destroy us with the Vietnam War and the counterculture movement, so it was good to speak out against the war. Yeah, you know, the government does. The government, the tail wags the dog, and it's very true. And the government has done the will of the Jews since 1913. The government's been nothing but a shill for Wall Street since 1913. That it might look like we elect these clowns, but they do the will of those people on Wall Street. There's no
We're no longer a government of the people, by the people, and for the people. We're basically a government of Jewish bankers for Jewish bankers.
Well, right, and we have been, and it's something that, you know, it's a ball that rolled in the 1800s that the Supreme Court made a ruling that corporations were persons, and that gave corporations the right to free speech, and that is what opened the door for corporate lobbying. Without that ruling, we have no lobbyists. Without that ruling, we have no corporate, no Jewish banking money in politics. On above the board. I mean, it's always going to happen below the board. There's no doubt.
But now Jews control the mechanism for the circulation of money and the creation of money, and they basically print money, spend it in the circulation, and they use that for lobbying. And there's no way we can compete with that.
We can never, ever compete, outspend, out politic, out-campaign the people that print the money. That's just insane to think that you could do that. You can't raise more money than Wall Street. They print it. They manufacture it. It's crazy that we ever let these people into our political process. But we have. And it's the fulfillment of Scripture. Revelation 17:17. Our kingdom would be handed over to the beast. And it happened. And that's how it happened. And we let it happen. It's not Yahweh's fault. It's not Yahweh's fault he knew what we would do. We let it happen.
And the fact is that we let it happen without a revolution.
Well, right. We were, you know, when I was a kid in the 70s, I remember hearing that, you know, all these this Jewish clinical psychology, psychobabble, you know, if a woman's getting raped, oh, she should lay back and enjoy it. And that's the absolutely most repulsive thing I could think of. However, for 100 years, we as a nation have been raped, and we have laid back and enjoyed it. That's exactly what we've done. And most of our people are partying with the devil until this day.
Now, the Jews that advocate, quote, the empowerment of women and feminism, how do they reconcile that view in the eyes of the public by telling a woman to lay back and enjoy it? Or do most people never connect the dots?
You know, there's a lot of hypocrisy in Jewish psychobabble, and it never ends.
Most people just don't connect the dots.
No. Okay, let's hear about Generalissimo Franco from a balanced, or at least a much more balanced point of view than the mainstream media and press have to offer us. William Guy Carr, Chapter 14, Pawns in the Game. To understand what happened in Spain in 1936, one must have at least a general idea of the type of man Franco really is. Franco entered the Spanish army seriously intending to make it his career. His life in the army reads like a romance. He distinguished himself after he was appointed to the Spanish Legion. He turned the defeat inflicted on General Silvestre by the Moors into a final victory. Not only did he lead his troops fearlessly, but he inspired in them great confidence because of his genius regarding strategy. He also earned the respect of his foes because of his military progress and his sound administrative policies in Morocco. The Moors finally looked upon him as almost divine. They came to call him the victorious, chief of chiefs, brave as a lion. The above facts explain why they rallied around him when he asked for their loyalty in 1936. And that's true. Franco used a great number of Moorish soldiers against the communists in 1936 to 1939. And let me say that as a comment, that first, I don't agree that we should ever have allowed a Moor to step foot into Europe. But it happened. It's a fact of history. And let me say that Franco must be, if you can win the respect of your enemies, that's a sign of a noble man.
Absolutely. And it seems that he only had to ask for their loyalty, whereas the communists in Russia, when they wanted Chinamen and Letts to come in and help them, they had to pay them a lot of money.
Franco is not spoken of as being popular with his brother generals. And we saw that last week, that what were they, 23 generals, and only two of them didn't side with the liberals and the communists?
Exactly. 21 of them bowed their knees at the Masonic altar.
Yes, they did. He did, however, have the respect of most of them. It was this fact that prevented the Popular Front government, which means basically the Bolsheviks, being turned into a totalitarian dictatorship. Azana, Caballero, and Carlos Prieto dominated the Popular Front government. Señor Gil Robles and Calvo Sotelo led the rightist opposition. When Sotelo revealed in the Cortes, the Spanish parliament, that between February and June 1936 there had been 113 general strikes, the mark of Jewish agitation, 218 partial strikes, 284 buildings, 171 churches, 69 clubs, and 10 newspaper offices burned. Do you think they were right-wing newspapers? And over 3,300 assassinations committed. Cesares Quiroga, premier at the time, jumped to his feet angrily and retorted, "You will be held personally responsible for the emotion your speech will cause." So you tell the truth against the Jew, and you're the one that they want to hold accountable.
Dolores, I'm looking at a picture of Azana. I would say 2-1 Azana is a Jew.
Well, I'm sure. Is by their fruits you know them. Dolores Ibaruri, a communist named Passionaria, because of her inflammatory speeches and fanatical actions, was a member of the Spanish Cortes. She sounds like the Nancy Pelosi of her time, right? She jumped to her feet and, pointing her finger at Sotelo, literally screamed, "That man has made his last speech," only because he was enumerating the crimes of the communists. She proved to be right. On July 13th, 1936, Senor Carlos Sotelo was dragged to his home by 15 assault guards under the command of Captain Don Angel Moreno. He was taken to a nearby churchyard and murdered. So was she a prophet or a conspirator? It was this event that caused many of the Spanish generals to break their oath to the Grand Orient, the Masonic Lodge, and ask Franco to take over leadership in Spain. Now the Grand Orient Lodge is the lodge from which the French Revolution had been launched over 100 years earlier. They never stop, do they? That must be a coincidence.
Oh, and this lady, apparently after the communists were expelled from power in 1939, she fled to the Soviet Union and continued writing and doing work for the NKVD.
Well, I'm sure she had a hell of a career there. Dolores Ibaruri was a Stalinist agent in Spain. She had been entrusted with the task of corrupting army officials, organizing and directing raids on government armories, and arming the revolutionary forces in Spain. She performed her tasks most efficiently. Now we see that a great number of Spanish generals who had previously sworn allegiance to the Grand Orient Lodge, the Masons, broke from them when this one politician, right-wing politician, was murdered, and they asked Franco to take over the leadership in Spain. So Frankel wasn't a lone nut by any means. He was called to the aid of his country. These generals saw what was going on. Assault guards raided the houses of many other prominent anti-communists following Sotelo's murder, but most of them had been warned and made their escape. On the day of the elections in February 1936, General Franco telephoned General Pozas, who was then in charge of the Civil Guard. He warned him that the communists elected to the Cortes planned to stir up mob violence. Isn't that what they always do? That's what they were doing against Paul in the markets in the cities of Greece. That they were hiring the scum from the markets and the lowlifes that tend to hang out in those places and to go after Paul.
They've always done that.
That's their pattern. Mob violence is their pattern. They incite mob violence. Satan and even the garden again and again.
They're seldom on hand, though, when the crackdown against the mob comes.
Absolutely not. That's why they deceive and corrupt people again and again. He warned him that the communists elected to the Cortes planned to stir up mob violence in the hope that they could develop a revolutionary effort for the purpose of overthrowing the Republican government that they were a part of. They were a part of that so-called Republican government, which was really a left-wing coalition of various parties, none of which could get a majority by themselves. General Pozas informed General Franco that he thought his fears were exaggerated. General Franco next telephoned General Molero, the Minister for War. He informed him of the threatening danger. Franco suggested that he be allowed to declare martial law. Franco drew up the necessary orders which would give him the authority to prevent excesses and mob violence. Only the signatures of the Council of Ministers were necessary to enable him to preserve law and order and protect the Republican government from revolutionary action. So even though it was a left-wing government, basically, the right-wing army general wants to protect it. And that's the noble cause. And we've seen that in this country, that even when our military didn't agree with the government, they still went into action for them. But Portela, who was then acting as premier, pleaded that he was too old to put the cabinet's decision into practice. Franco retorted, "You have brought Spain to this sorry pass. It is now your duty to try and save her." General Franco was given orders to proceed to the Canary Islands. The order actually meant his virtual exile from Spain. Before he left, General Franco had a conference with Generals Mole and Varela. They assured him, they felt certain, that once the other generals who had joined the Grand Orient military lodges knew the truth, most of them would break with the Grand Orient and accept his leadership. Before the final meeting broke up, a secret means of communication between Mola and Franco had been arranged. Immediately, Franco departed from the Canary Islands, and Stalin's agents renewed their activities. So we see that Franco wasn't a ruthless tyrant who was seeking a political takeover and a destruction and tyranny over the nation. Franco was actually a noble and just general who followed his orders. And the Canary Islands is a virtual exile from Spain.
They wanted him out of the picture.
Well, absolutely, but he followed the orders. There's no doubt this man had nothing but good intentions, and he knew to follow that he should follow orders.
He wasn't a power monger.
Absolutely not. He's nothing like the Jews portray him to be.
They portray him as an opportunist who happened to be in charge of a lot of men at the same time, and he took advantage of Spain's chaos to make himself a dictator. That's the popular culture.
Well, right, and he was also a flunky and a shill for Hitler and Mussolini, and he was just doing their bidding. On June 23rd, 1936, Franco wrote a long letter to the Minister for War, in which he once again pointed out specific dangers. But these warnings were ignored as the others had been. It was obvious that the communist members of the Republican government were able to dominate its policy and actions. The murder of Carlo Sotelo on July 13th decided Franco. Yeah, you know, that is a great parallel to Patton's being sent to Japan, right? The murder of Calvé Sotelo on July 13th decided Franco. He sent a coded message to the generals who were sworn to fight and save Spain from becoming a Russian satellite state. Amongst those Franco contacted were Mola, Godet, Fanjul, San Giorgio, Salaque, some officers of the Spanish Navy, and Quiepo de Llano. After the message was sent, Franco flew from the Canaries to Tutan, where he knew he could rely upon the loyalty of the Moroccan troops. So Franco only came into action when the generals of Spain decided that he should. On July 21, 1936, Franco issued his proclamation, which defined the issue at stake in the least possible number of words. It read, "It is the duty of every man to enter this definite struggle between Russia and Spain." So Franco realized that this was the Russians trying to take over and Bolshevize Spain. Thus started the Civil War. Professor Unamuno explained the issue in even fewer words. He said, "It is a struggle of Christianity against barbarism." Now, William Guy Carr says he should have said against Illuminism. I would say he should have said against the Jews. They're the real devils.
Against Jewry.
Absolutely. And Bolshevik Russia, the Bolshevization of Russia, the French Revolution, the revolutions of 1848, the Spanish Civil War, World War II, that we took part in on the wrong side, they were all part of the struggle between Christians and Jewry. And America and Britain fought for the Jews.
And they also took part in the overthrow of good government in Rhodesia, good sane government in South Africa, the destruction of the two Portuguese colonies, Angola and Mozambique, not to mention Equatorial Guinea, Portuguese Guinea, Spanish Sahara, you name it, French Algeria. They betrayed colony after colony. In fact, there's strong evidence that Britons and Americans armed, trained, equipped, and funded various anti-Rhodesian terrorists. And the Canadians actually gave Mugabe safe haven, so he was out of the reach of Rhodesian security forces. And now today they're decrying Mugabe, saying how horrible it is he's in power. They made it possible. He's the reason they're in power.
There's no doubt. But he's also destroyed the nation. Now, I mean, Zimbabwe was a, when most of the farmers were white, Zimbabwe was a great exporter of grain and other food items from Zimbabwe to the rest of Africa. And now they're a large importer. Blacks can't run anything. That's just a fact of life.
They can run it into the ground.
Well, that's it. Wherever they find you have sloth, corruption, and
misery and famine.
Degeneration. Right. Okay, to continue with William Guy Carr. Other evidence was obtained to prove that Stalin's Comintern plotted to subjugate Spain to bring about a total war between Britain and her allies on the one side and Germany and her allies on the other. There is the report of the meeting of the political secretariat of the Comintern, which took place January 25, 1938. The purpose of the meeting was to discuss ways and means to develop the revolutionary effort in Spain and North Africa. Attending the meeting were representatives of the Profintern and the foreign branches of the GPU, or the Soviet secret police. All of Moscow's most experienced revolutionary leaders were present. Yezhov, head of the secret section of the Comintern, Georges Dmitriev of the Reichstag Fire Infamy, head of the League of the Godless and the Free Thinkers League. So the Jews admit who they are, right?
There's no free thinkers in that league.
No, there aren't. The then secretary of the Communist International, Schick, Manuelsky, is that a Spanish-Polish name or a Jewish-Polish?
Maybe he's an Anglo-Saxon.
Yeah, right. Lozovsky of the Profintern, Popescu, Weintrauben, Gorovitch, Lehman, Turini, Adami, and Valdez, who represented the Soviet of Foreign Affairs in the Political Bureau of the Comintern. These are the names of the men who all took an active part in spreading the spear of communist influence around the world in later years. After the meeting, Open, Dmitriev gave a fiery speech. He denounced the lack of missionary vigor among the special military envoys who had been sent to Spain to help corrupt the Popular Front government and direct the military operation of the loyalist armies. Their action, he said, has not had sufficient stimulus and evolutionary elan on the general European masses. The results obtained have not justified the heavy risks taken. The principal struggle, which is to bring about an armed conflict between two groups of capitalistic states, has not been reached. And they were successful in that. Then he went on to advocate the Soviet military commandment in Spain should pass under the control of the Comintern emissaries, like the ambassadors, who know how to impregnate him with the necessary revolutionary feeling. In the civil war in Spain, the propaganda issued at the time convinced the average person that a small group of generals in Spain had organized a revolt to overthrow the Republican Popular Front government and establish a military dictatorship. And it appears that they actually wanted to protect the Republican Popular Front government from a Bolshevik takeover. The Popular Front forces named themselves loyalists. Well, isn't that cute?
You want the full names of some of those people you read? I found some full names. For instance, Lazovsky, his full name is Solomon Lazovsky, and Manilinsky, he was born Dymtro Zakharovich Manilinsky. They claim that he was the son of an Orthodox priest, but they don't say if that Orthodox Judaism or Eastern Orthodox. And looking at this picture, it leaves no question.
Franco forces called themselves nationalists. The loyalists were comprised of all political factions left of center. The nationalists contained all political factions right of center. And we see that all of these, the Democrats, the socialists, they're all just shills for Bolsheviks and communists. They always have been. The communists were divided into two groups. Those who intended to turn the proletarian dictatorship into a Stalinist totalitarian state, and those who wished to make the Spanish Soviet a unit in the International of Soviet Republics, as advocated by the Marxist theory. So we see there are no good socialists. One of them wants to rule over it and as a Stalinist totalitarian state, and one of it still wants to make it a Soviet republic.
Exactly, and isn't that what the Dutch ambassador said in 1919, that no help should be given to the other social revolutionaries whose stated aims are different, but whose objective is ultimately the same as the Bolsheviks?
Well, absolutely. And that's exactly what he said. He knew what time it was.
And I'm reading here about this Solomon Lazovsky. He was ultimately executed by Stalin in 1952, along with 13 other members of the Jewish Anti-Fascist Committee, in a purge that Stalin orchestrated. So it seems that he served the Soviet government well, and then when they didn't need him, boom, he's gone.
Wolves eat wolves too. On the right also were the phalangists. Now, today's media would have you believe that the phalangists, who were the National Socialists of Spain, that they were the majority of the right, but they were only a fraction of the right. In reality, the Spanish Civil War was not a war of the people who were Republicans, they were communists, against the people who were Nazis, as the media today would have you believe. It was a war of Jewish-inspired communists against Christians. That's exactly what it was. On the right also were the phalangists, the extreme rightists, among whom there were undoubtedly quite a number of the German type of Nazi, not the German people, but the followers of German Nazism, who believed in using total war to subdue their leftist enemies. With the situation of, well, Hitler knew that was the only alternative. It's the only thing that damn Jews understand. With a situation of this kind, it is understandable that those on the right accused all those on the left of being communists, while all those on the left accused all those right of center of being fascists. Most horrible atrocities, including torture, mutilation, rape, and the execution of thousands of innocent victims, were committed by the communists as part of the accepted pattern of the Reign of Terror, which they did in France, which they did in Russia, and which they would have done here, but our daughters just gave it to them. A few extremists on the Franco side committed atrocities also. All civil wars seem to turn a great number of men into inhuman brutes who descend below the level of brute beasts once the bloodlust has been aroused in them. Civil war cannot be justified. Those who advocate revolutionary wars should be executed. The evidence goes to show that the King of Spain in 1931 and General Franco in 1936 did everything in their power to avoid fighting a civil war. Franco did not call upon the citizens of Spain to rally around him until he had exhausted every other means of preventing the communist coup taking place on July 26, 1936. The professional army in Spain had been reduced greatly in numbers. It had been replaced by a national police force. Isn't that what Obama wants to do here?
Absolutely. He said that we need a civilian security force as well funded and well equipped as the military.
Don't we see the patterns? It's incredible that our people don't see the patterns. It had been replaced by a national police force controlled by the leftist government. It is extraordinary that Franco's bid to defeat the communist plot did not fail, because post-war investigations revealed that in 1936, the armed forces were riddled with traitors, both officers and men, who had been placed in key positions by the agents of Moscow working within the Popular Front government in Spain. We have that going on right now. We had it going on under the Clinton administration, too.
Well, it seems all of our government officials have made their loyalties known. They are avowed enemies of the Constitution and the Republic. They hate
Absolutely.
This nation.
There's no doubt. On July 21st, 1936, the Moscow-directed organization for taking over the government in Spain was complete. Franco knew that in one day, Julio Álvarez del Valle, who was foreign minister in the Republican government and commissar general, appointed hundreds of political commissars to the Republican army. The majority of these men were communists. Valle did this without consulting the premier. The commissars compelled soldiers to join the Communist Party, offering them advantages and promotion if they did, and they threatened persecution by every means in their power if they did not. Luis Aracastain, ex-ambassador of the Spanish Republic in Paris, published this fact in the New York Times, May 19, 1939. It was proved to be true. The New York Times published that. I'm surprised. Indalecio Prieto was Spanish socialist deputy and minister of national defense during the Spanish Civil War. He helped direct the war against Franco. In a report published in Paris in 1939 entitled, How and Why I Left the Ministry of National Defense, he said, It is difficult to be on guard because there are communists occupying confidential positions who, so as to avoid suspicion, are ordered to hide their affiliation and sometimes ordered to conceal it by joining other parties. Well, they're called neocons here. Dr. Juan Negrin was one of these. He was one of the most powerful men in Spain during the Civil War. Prieto wrote of him, because I refused to obey orders from Moscow, Juan Negrin expelled me from the government over which he presided on April 5, 1938. I occupied the post of Minister of National Defense in his government. Two simultaneous actions were initiated against me. One was entrusted to the Russian secret police and military men who operated in our country, and the other to the Spanish communists. The Russians ordered and the Spanish communists obeyed. Dr. Juan Negrin claims he was and is not a communist, but it was he who ordered that 7,000 boxes of Spanish gold be delivered to Stalin. The boxes were loaded in ships, Kine, Neve, and Valguiles, the names of the ships, All three displayed the Soviet flag. Jose Velasco and Arturo Candela accompanied the shipments as persons of trust to Odessa, which is in the Ukraine. Everything was done undercover, and other members of the Popular Front government were not cognizant of the situation.
And no shock they took them right to Odessa. Odessa's probably 30% Jewish.
Well, yes, it's a very heavily Jewish city, which is on the coast of the northern coast of the Black Sea in southern Ukraine. During Nagrin's term of office, three communists were appointed as undersecretaries of defense and thus were the true masters of the Republican Army, Navy, and Air Force. Largo Caballero was a communist, but when he refused to obey the order given him by Moscow's emissaries, they overruled his orders even when he was serving his presidential term. So Moscow was running Spain, there's no doubt. When he tried to rectify his own mistakes, he found it was too late. How Moscow's agents in foreign lands obtained such an absolute control of leftist leaders is explained by Prieto. He wrote, "The majority of the military commands of the Popular Front government were finally occupied by the communists, and in their hands were the most important reins of power. How could that phenomenon happen? Through a system of coercion graduated between personal advancement for those who bowed their heads and the murder of those who rebelled." That's how the Jews run everything. C.O. Rogers, in his Spain, A Tragic Journey, makes reference to the capture of documents which prove beyond doubt that a full-scale revolution had been planned to break out in July 1936. Rogers wrote, "Discovery amongst militant communists and anarchists of documents and plans showed that a carefully schemed plot had been matured for an outbreak which would upset even the central government in Madrid and establish a Soviet dictatorship, the work of the Illuminati."
Well, it seems that Spain was just to become a colony of the Soviet Union.
Absolutely. And even today, in all of our history books, it's the rightists that took over Spain. And it was really the rightists,
that
the right wing, who were wanting to prevent the takeover by the Bolsheviks. There's no doubt.
All they did was they reacted to a war that was forced on them by the leftists.
Yes, absolutely. And they wanted to preserve the government, and leftists wanted to destroy it. Rogers' statement was proved to be true. Evidence was produced to prove that both General Franco and General Mola knew as early as April 1936 that a communist coup was planned, first for May 1st, which is their date, then set back to June 29th, and then set back again to July 22nd. I don't know the significance of those days. The delays were ordered to give those who were entrusted with putting the plan of revolt into effect more time to complete the final necessary details. The whole world should have known of the Moscow-directed plot against Spain because the final orders were intercepted while being passed by the Comintern to the leaders of the revolutionary movement in Spain. The documents were given to the Echo de Paris, which published them in April 1936. The Echo de Paris, or Paris, article reads, "Text of instructions for the Red Militia. These instructions to the heads of the Spanish Red Militia do not emanate from a Spanish central organization, but from the technical services in Paris, which sent them to Spain at that date. These technical services are those of the French Communist Party working in close cooperation with the Comintern and its delegates in France. The document which we are publishing is in the hands of the government. We were not the parties who communicated it to them. We are convinced that M. Daladier, Minister of War and Defense, has given orders for preventive measures of defense and protection to be taken."
Shall I go ahead and read the text?
Please.
The abbreviated text is as follows. 1. Reinforce shock troops and guards in barracks and supply them with automatic pistols. These shock troops and guards are members of Communist Party serving in the permanent forces and reserves. Now, I imagine what this really amounts to is go into the barracks and kill anybody that won't join the revolt. 2. These troops will be placed in communication with the groups who are to break into the barracks. The latter will be in uniform and under the orders of our officers in whom we have complete confidence. 3. When the fight starts, our officers will be given admittance with their groups secretly. They will contact the respective committees and carry out the prearranged plan of attack inside the barracks. So what that essentially means is they're going to get their people into the barracks, and before the patriotic true Spanish soldiers realize what's going on, they're going to be murdered.
Absolutely.
4. The provisional committees in the barracks shall renew every 2 days their lists of enemies, neutrals, sympathizers, and experts. When the barracks have been taken over, those classed as enemies, including in particular all commanders and officers, shall be rapidly eliminated and without hesitation. What did I just say would happen with number 3? Each member of the committees shall be provided with a list of the names of individuals who are to be murdered by himself personally. And I imagine at some point his name's going to be on an enemy's list too, once he's already done all the work they need him to do.
And these procedures were developed by the Russians, by the Russian communists, out of their experience with the Soviet army, with the Russian army before it became the Soviet army, I'm sure.
6. After the enemies have been disposed of, neutrals shall be subjected to severe tests in order to kill in them any hesitation habitual in such undecided characters. And I'm sure that the neutrals will soon be up against a wall, too. 7. The committee handling the neutrals will make the necessary arrangements for the vigilance groups outside to enter the barracks on the pretext of assisting to put down the rebellion. As we said, communism always says that they're going to bring order out of the anarchy, and all they bring is death and misery. 8. This has little importance. 9. Those detailed to liquidate generals on the active list shall consist of 10 men with revolvers. The generals have 2 adjutants and a secretary who must be murdered in their own homes. Those detailed to perform these killings shall not withdraw in face of any obstacle or opposition, and they shall eliminate anyone who opposes them regardless of sex or age. They're just planning on overwhelming men in their homes, even if they're even if they've taken their oath to the Grand Orient Lodge, it seems that all generals are to be killed.
Well, they were just whores in the first place.
Exactly, and they're going to get rid of them since they no longer need them. 10. Those detailed to eliminate generals not holding command shall consist of 3 men groups and shall carry out their duties as outlined in preceding paragraph. 11 and 12. Details how houses and sites and strategic positions must be procured by communist militants and secretly armed and fortified in order to ambush troops who may succeed in escaping from barracks. The instructions read, as military officers have protected cars, groups of our militants must proceed to strategic points such as crossroads and cars and trucks armed with machine guns so as to prevent help reaching those inside the cities. Lorries shall carry supplies of grenades. 13. Our militants shall quickly put on the uniform previously obtained, and they shall be served with rifles. 14. When the rebellion breaks out, our militant groups, wearing uniforms of the civil guards and of the assault guard, and the equipment already prepared for them, shall arrest all heads of all political parties under pretext of the necessity of doing so for their personal protection. Once in custody, the procedure for the elimination of generals not holding command shall be carried out. Uniformed groups shall also arrest and detain important capitalists whose names appear in Appendix B of Circular Number 32. 15. Violence shall not be used against these capitalists except if they resist. They shall, however, be forced to hand over the balance of the current accounts at the banks and their securities. In the event of concealment, they shall be completely eliminated, including their families, without exception. It is desirable that cells shall be worked in on their staffs as domestics or mechanics, as they can be very useful. 16 can be skipped. 17. With regard to members of the armed forces who claim to be sympathizers, the same tactics shall be followed as was done in Russia. First, use their service and then eliminate them as enemies. For our effort to be successful and permanent, a neutral officer or man is better than one who has betrayed his uniform because his life was in danger. It is likely he would betray us also if provided with the opportunity. And that's what they always do. They always get rid of useful idiots.
Absolutely.
18. Instructions to our militia regarding mobilization, movement of transportation, use of arms and marksmanship must be intensified. 19. Militia posted at crossroads must eliminate all defeated troops trying to escape. 20. Machine gun posts shall be located in premises which cover the front and rear of all armories, police stations, and fire halls, and all approaches to and exits from the cities. And if in spite of this the enemy are able to get out, they shall be attacked with hand grenades. 21. Other militia shall be placed in armed lorries in strategical positions within the cities, not more than 1 kilometer apart. They shall also be armed with machine guns. 22. Liaison shall be by light cars and cyclists, who shall be armed with revolvers. 23. No importance. 24. The most intimate details concerning the lives and characters of all neutrals and sympathizers must be obtained and carefully recorded, including their family requirements and the influence which love of their children and desire for these necessary requirements may exercise over them. If any of our militia or any of the neutrals and sympathizers show any kind of weakness or resistance to orders, they must be denounced to the highest committee of the organization as being guilty of complicity and or reaction. 25. Our militia must be organized to work away from their own homes and localities because experience has taught us that at the last moment, through sentimentalism, men working in their own localities and amongst their families and friends have failed to carry out our plan with proper enthusiasm.
Translation, that's what the Romans did. Yeah, that, and that's what the Jews did in the Soviet Union.
People don't want to gun down their neighbors. That's what it translates to. 26. All owners of depots of goods and merchandise shall be regarded as important capitalists. These depots must be organized to serve the proletariat through the administrative groups. Translation, we're going to seize all their property. 27. Deals with the question of using starvation as a means of reducing opposition quickly and confirms what has been said regarding the use of this weapon in national disputes and international warfare. It reads, quote, during the first week and until the Constitution becomes normal, the supply of food and drink to the bourgeois is prohibited, end quote. And we've already seen in Russia who they consider to be the bourgeois. Anybody who owns half an acre of land and grows anything for himself or has any kind of independent wealth.
Or ever had a
an employee. So you
and that's, you know, if we don't think that we're moving in this direction here, people are crazy.
So if you have a landscaping business and you employ your son and a brother-in-law, you're bourgeois. 28. Stocks of food in barracks and in the hands of our enemies which cannot be captured must be rendered useless by mixing paraffin or other substances with them. And paraffin is rat poison, unless I'm mistaken. So it seems that this is just a recipe for mass murder. It's a recipe for genocide in the Iberian Peninsula on a scale that hadn't been seen until the Ukraine in the 1920s under the Red Terror. It's the Red Terror come to Spain, and Franco rose up to stop it.
The paraffin was candle wax.
And it's interesting to note that I think a similar thing is going on in this country. Since I can guarantee you most all armories, you know, you go to a military base and you'd expect to see guns everywhere, but almost all the guns basically are stored in the armories, and the armories are guarded by non-whites. In fact, that was a major sticking point for me for why I ultimately did not join the military. That was a major issue. They told me that all of my personal firearms would have to be stored in the armory, and I would have to sign them out. And they told me that if I lived off base, I would have to register them with local police or leave them in the base armory. And I'm figuring, well, why should I join a military that claims to defend the Constitution if I'm going to lose key constitutional freedoms and I won't have access to my own personal property?
I no, think you won't. That's the way the military is. That they strip you of your entire identity.
And there's nothing.
It's
there's
just
nothing
like federal
sane.
Prison.
There's nothing saying that those non-whites, those bitter Black Panthers and Ms. Tzula Raza members guarding the armory won't simply throw open the doors at 2 in the morning, arm all of their comrades, and then they'll go on a massacre and kill every single honky on the base. I could easily see that happening in the near future, couldn't you?
Well, we are, you know, Spain elected what we would consider to be a liberal democracy in 1931. Mm-hmm. They went from monarchy to electing a liberal majority, and for that reason, because the liberals, and when I say liberals, I mean the socialists, the communists, the Bolsheviks, all pulled together, anybody left of center, that they went from a monarchy to electing a liberal government, and because the liberals were all anti-monarchist, and the king saw that this could cause a civil war, he abdicated his throne and left the country.
Yes, but we've already shown that it was a sham election.
Well, right, it was a sham election, just like our elections here. And However, we see now that even that was not good enough for the Bolsheviks, wanted total, complete control.
Nothing will satisfy them except bloodshed, wasn't it? Who was it? It was in Izvestia or the Red Gazette. Remember, we read out of Russia number one. They said they wanted floods of blood, as much blood as possible.
Paraffin is wax. It's a type of wax.
Okay.
The liberal democracy is seen by the Jew as a stepping stone to absolute Jewish control. Kerensky government, Spanish Civil War.
Oh, as far as the poison,
we're moving in this direction today. The entire West has been creeping in this direction for 100 years. Like I said, we're taking the slow route. I'm sorry, go on.
That is wax, indeed. I was thinking of warfarin, which would be rat poison, but paraffin is some kind of wax. And we did take the slow road, and here we are today.
We're a communist state. People don't realize it. Read the Communist Manifesto and look at America today. We are a communist nation.
Or read the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution, or I should say the original 10 Amendments, the Bill of Rights, and you can see that we're not that country anymore.
Right. The only thing, we still have a remnant of a few of those rights, and that's only a remnant because the government can justify locking anybody up for any reason and throwing away the key, and most citizens aren't going to care.
As long as it's not them.
Exactly.
But the way I look at it, if they can railroad one person out of his rights, then those rights are meaningless for everybody. If they want to, they could come into your house right now, my house, seize my computer, 2 weeks later claim, oh, look what we found on your computer, and how can I refute that? How can I rebut that? Because they had access to it, and I can't prove it wasn't on there before they got it.
Well, let me say that the founders of this nation and the people that wrote the Bill of Rights, George Mason, and his contemporaries, they believed that the rights were granted by God.
Mm-hmm.
And because rights were granted by God, no government could infringe upon them, and your fellow man could never infringe upon them. But the government has become our God. And our enemies have packaged very slick sounding arguments in order to coax the majority into depriving the minority of certain rights. And once one man in this country is deprived of the right to own a gun, or the right to free speech, or the right to practice his religion as he sees fit, well then nobody in this country is deserving of any of those rights. Period. Judge as you shall be judged. That's the Christian principle. And if you want to justify revoking one person's God-given rights, you don't deserve your own. But the Jew has gotten us to justify doing this and justify doing that. Oh, it's for the public good. Oh, it's for this reason. Oh, it's for that reason. So none of us deserve any rights.
Or it's for the children. Oh, won't someone please think of the children? So Americans basically deserve to be enslaved to the Zog regime.
Well, they absolutely do.
They've done
because
nothing.
They all signed up to doing this for the good of the people, for doing that. The government has become their God. And when the government becomes your God, the government acquires the ability to control every facet of your life.
Mm-hmm. So in the name of good, they do evil.
Well, absolutely. That's the way the Jew operates. That's the way Satan seduces people. Okay, I'm a William Guy Carr.
All right. Since these orders were issued, the revolutionary leaders in all countries have been given special instructions to make careful plans to deal with the members of the police and fire departments, because experience has shown that the majority of these civic employees, quote, remain loyal to their bourgeois bosses. Excuse me. The action recommended is to, 1, infiltrate into the two forces, 2, corrupt the rank and file, 3. Party members are urged to purchase or rent properties covering the approaches to both back and front of police stations and fire halls so the member can be eliminated as they change shifts. The hour to revolt is to coincide with the time the police change shifts. The orders which were given to the leaders of the Communist Party in Spain detailed how they were to take over public utilities and public services, as well as civic administration. The objective was to obtain, in the shortest possible time, full and absolute control of all food supplies and communication systems. Revolutionary orders seized at Majorco in October 1936 were translated by Jacques Bordeaux, who afterwards wrote Chaos in Spain. They were on their way to revolutionary leaders in Spain. Spanish document. With the object of being able to control the smallest details of the movement from the 8th of May, only the link agents will be able to give orders, and they will communicate with each other by means of the cipher ELM 5422. Now, I'm wondering, where do you think they got this interesting code system from? You think they just made it on their own, or were they given it by the NKVD? The local leaders must give verbal instructions to the committee with the help of the following code. 1.2.1, order to begin mobilization. 2.1.2, order to begin the revolt. 2.2.1.1.1, order to attack at predetermined points. 3.3.3, provide for counter-revolutionaries. 2.4.3, mobilization of trade unions. This shows you who pulls the strings on trade unions. As we've always said, they're nothing but communist fronts, and the members are all shills.
Kind of looks like the IRS code, too.
2.5.5, general strike. 2.6.5, acts of sabotage, etc., blowing up rail lines. 1.3.2, signal to put off the revolt. 1.1.0, order to provision. 1.0.0, reorganization is ready. 0.0, close frontiers and ports. 1.1, execution of those whose names are on the blacklist. All these orders will be given on the day before the revolt, 1st May or 29th at midnight, from the transmitter installed in the Casa del Pueblo at Madrid, the wavelength of which is nearly the same as that of the Madrid Union Radio. Organization of Madrid to be divided into the following sections. A.B. Chamartín de la Rosa, HQ at the Casa del Pueblo of this district. C.D. Cuatro Caminos, HQ at Socialist Club of the district. E.F. Palace District HQ at the Printing Works of Mundo Obrero. G.H. University District, HQ at Editorial Offices of El Socialista. I.J. Latina District, HQ at Casa del Pueblo. M.N. Inclusa District, HQ at Socialist Center. N.O. Jardinas District, HQ at Garage at Castello 19. P.Q. Southern District, HQ at Socialist Centers of Vallecas. R.S. Carabanchel District, HQ at Socialist Club. T.U.V. Center of Madrid, HQ at Casa del Pueblo, Secretaries. X.Y.Z. Offices numbers 2, 3, 4, 6, 8, 10, 12, Balcony Room, Plan of Campaign in Madrid. The revolt will be announced by 5 bombs let off at dusk. Immediately a fascist attack on one of the CNT labor centers will be faked. Then a general strike will be declared, and the soldiers and chiefs who support us will rise in revolt. The groups will come into action. Those designated in T.U.V. will take over the Bureau of Communications, the Presidency, and the Ministry of War. Those belonging to the district will attack the commissariats, and those belonging to the XYZ section will take the Bureau of Public Safety. A special group composed exclusively of machine gunners with hand grenades will go to the headquarters of the government and attack it by the following routes: Carretas, Montera, Mayor, Correos, Paz, Ocaca, Arino, Preciados, Carmen, and San Jerome. The groups composed of 50 cells of 10 men each will act in streets of the second and third order, and of 2 cells only in those of the first order and in the avenues. The orders are for the immediate execution of all the counter-revolutionaries who have been detained. The Republicans of the Popular Front will be asked to support the movement, and in ease of refusal, they will be expelled from Spain.
Not sure that means with a bullet to the head.
I was about to say expelled in a box. French document, secret, to the leaders of groups and sections, cell of St. George de Bois, Lookout Station, 1st Group, HQ, Town Hall, Leader of Group A, President, 1st Section B, 4 volunteers, 5 rifles, 1 revolver, 70 rounds of ammunition for rifle, 20 for revolver, 15 grenades. 2nd Section C, 6 volunteers, 4 rifles, 3 revolvers, 70 rounds of ammunition for rifle, 20 for revolver. 3rd Section D Leader, C, 4 volunteers for distributing arms and ammunition and for making ammunition. 6 revolvers, 15 cans petrol, 25 cans, 5 liters each reserve, issued to Comrade C. 2nd Group, HQ, Railway Station, Leader, DEP. 7 volunteers, 8 rifles, 80 rounds of ammunition, 20 sticks of dynamite, issued to Comrade E. 3rd Group, at the station, Leader, F.E. 5 volunteers, 2 experts, 6 rifles, 1 revolver, 60 rounds of ammunition for rifle, 20 for revolver. 1,500 meters of insulated telephone wire, issued to Comrade F. 4th Group, Attacking Party, HQ, Basement of Town Hall, Leader G. 1st Section, H, 4 volunteers, 4 rifles, 50 rounds of ammunition, 10 knives, 12 ropes. I wonder what those ropes are for. 2nd Section, I, 4 volunteers, 4 rifles, 50 rounds of ammunition, 10 knives, 10 ropes. Special Instructions, 2nd Group, Blow up Railway and Fascist Convoys. 3rd Group, Link Immediately, Telephone Exchange, PO, Railway Station and Town Hall. To all groups, save ammunition pending arrival of arms and ammunition from the cell at Rochefort. 1st Group to Commander, all provisions, animals and fodder pending arrival of instructions from Rochefort for distribution. Or commandeer. All right, and that's signed Comrade President. It seems they're very lightly armed and that any serious military force would crush them. That's why they have to co-opt the generals and kill them in their homes.
Well, absolutely. You cut off the head and the chicken runs around without a body.
I mean, here they are. They have groups of 6 and 7 volunteers, and they only have 5 rifles and 2 revolvers and 10 rounds per each man.
And we see William Guy Carr documenting that there was a detailed plan by the Bolsheviks to take over their own, basically their own, left-wing government so that they could rule over the nation tyrannically. And the generals and the right-wing people, who were basically the Christian conservatives of the nation, stopped it. And they're demonized by the Jews today. And that shows you whose side our media is on. It shows you, if nothing else, that proves that the American media and American academia are on the side of the Bolsheviks. And they still are.
Well, they are Bolsheviks.
Yes, they are Bolsheviks.
And they thought they could take over Spain with a bunch of limp-wristed, poorly armed ARA, Antifa college youth, basically.
Well, yes, and they're doing a pretty good job here in America of that same thing.
Well, that's because we never had a Franco to come back into the country with elite paratroopers and a foreign legion and a bunch of hardened, crazy, desert-dwelling Moors and put them in their place.
Exactly. No Franco and no Hitler for America. What we need is Yahshua Christ. That's what we need. That's the only thing that's going to put an end to this.
And I imagine these limp-wristed Antifa youth in Spain with their 10 rounds of ammunition for their one revolver, they weren't expecting to be facing 500,000 crazy screaming Moors. Since ultimately, didn't Franco have about 400,000 Moors before the end of the war?
Yes, he did use a large number of Moors.
And he, of course, had the Spanish Legion, the paratroopers, and the elite infantry of Spain. And I'm sure these self-styled proletarian soldiers, this Red Guard of Spain, they weren't expecting to face actual real soldiers. They were expecting to ambush them in their beds and cut their throats. And from the looks of it, they were issued more rope than they were issued revolvers, so they were expecting to do a lot of hanging of unarmed men.
Well, that's how they operate.
I think it was Lenin who said, "One man with a gun can control 1,000 without." Well, in Spain, they basically had several dozen men with minimal weapons, and they ran into equal number of men with better weapons. And that I think is the one reason we haven't seen a total Bolshevik revolution in this country. The populace is too well armed, and they've basically won the cultural war. So if they push it, they'd have a real shooting war, and they don't want that.
Exactly. So they will continue to chip away at the populace. and flood us with aliens. And when the time comes, we will have a Bolshevization of America if we allow this trend to continue.
The Mexicans are the largest fifth column ever assembled in the history of the world, aren't they?
Well, they're probably the second largest. I think the Jews still have them outnumbered.
All right. But
in fact, the Mexicans are basically Spanish-speaking Jews. There's not really a difference.
Absolutely not. They've done studies. 70 to 75 million people in Central and South America have Sephardic genetics. So it seems to me that the Western Hemisphere is the Jews' paradise.
Well, it was. When the conquistadors came over here and thousands of Jews bought their way onto their ships to settle here in America, the Jew found himself a wide-open home of people that basically weren't Christian. And a lot of the Spaniards that settled here were Christian, but the natives surely weren't Christian. Well, and when they convert, it's only in name. It's not any true conversion.
Exactly. And, you know, Martin Luther said the way you baptize a Jew is you take him to a bridge over the River Elbe, tie a stone around his neck, and throw him over the edge.
Well, that would be the only way to baptize him properly.
I've read accounts that some of the conquistadors, who were obviously Sephardic crypto-Jews, had basically harems of native wives numbering into the 70s, 80s, and some well over 100. So they could have sired potentially, you know, one Sephardic crypto-Jew having 200 or 300 offspring. And they're called mestizos, and they claim that they're half white, but I think they're just lawless brute beasts, and they're Jews. There's nothing white about any of those people. They hate all white people.
Yes. Yes, they do. That's innate in them. It's genetic. It's the only explanation.
Sometimes when I look around in my surroundings here in North America, it's hard to believe that this continent is anything other than half Jewish.
Well, it practically is. It practically is, and we don't realize the extent that the Canaanite blood and Arab blood has gotten into our population.
They claim there are only 15 million Jews in the world. I'd say there have to be at least 100 million.
Well, it's true that they're everywhere, and there's a hell of a lot more than 3% of the population here that's Jewish. 3% of the population might go to synagogues, but I would bet 15 to 20% of the population is of Jewish blood. Or Canaanite blood. And
that's startling.
That's not including the Mexicans in the population. That's only talking about the quote-unquote Europeans.
So America might only be 40% white.
I'm sure it is probably only about 40% true white, if that.
And if we do ever rise up, they have a huge standing army of Mexicans ready to cut our throats, since they hate us all.
Yes,
and
they do.
And all they have to do is promise them, kill the gringo and you can have his house.
And the only saving grace is that most of us still have guns, and most of us still believe in God.
But they're looking for ways on, every single day, they're looking for new ways to disarm people. You get into a verbal altercation with your wife, misdemeanor domestic assault charge, your guns are gone. You were dishonorably discharged from the army, your guns are gone.
That's a part of what I was talking about before, when the general population agrees to revoke the rights of one man. That general population, they no longer deserve their rights. Who are you to deprive me of my God-given right? You shall be judged as you judge.
The Constitution doesn't allow for the stripping of rights even for felonies, let alone misdemeanors.
Well, I don't know what they don't understand about these rights shall not be infringed. It's pretty clear to me.
And they try and claim that the 1968 Gun Control Act was lifted word for word from Hitler's laws and that Hitler was a gun grabber. Hitler had some of the best gun laws in the world. They lowered the handgun age to 18. Concealed carry permits were issued to basically any party member who wanted it. The only people who couldn't get guns were drunks, criminals, Jews, and retards. And arguably, Jews and retards shouldn't have guns. If a Jew has a gun, you know he's going to use it to kill some policeman to try and incite a proletarian revolt.
Well, right. A Jew with a gun is a thug. There's no doubt. But the one Christian should never, ever try to, I don't care for what reason, our founding fathers, the founding fathers of this nation considered those rights inalienable.
And now they've been alienated.
You cannot be separated from them.
But now there are more ways you can be separated from them than ways you can get them back.
Well, yeah, right. I mean, just have a little spat with your wife, and it's immediately domestic violence.
I have a friend who met up with his ex-wife at a self-storage unit to divide up property, and he slipped on the icy ground, and as he was slipping, his one foot bumped her shin. She called the police and got a restraining order against him, and they came over his house, and they said, if you have any guns, we'll have to take them.
Right.
And the police were friends with him, and they liked him, so they said, if you have any, we'd prefer not to hear about it, since they knew he had dozens. But that's how easy it is for a woman to get a restraining order against her ex-husband.
Oh, right. I had that personal situation in my own life. I mean, I was divorced once in 1987. And I never, you know, I was giving my wife money when I didn't have to give her money. We had a fair relationship. It wasn't, there was no animosity and no violence between us ever. However, as soon as she filed for divorce, her lawyer said, go get a restraining order. And she was like, why? And she said, because you have to go get a restraining order. That's what lawyers do. That's what divorce lawyers do.
And they're all Jews.
Well, he was Irish, but he probably should have been a Jew. If he wasn't, he missed a good opportunity.
But they've thoroughly Judaized our society so that most white people are de facto Jews. They think like Jews, they walk like Jews, they talk like Jews, and they live like Jews.
There's no doubt. There is no doubt. That's the soundest observation.
All right, do you want to finish up the William Guy Carr?
Well, it's 9:17, and we're not going to get through this 15th chapter.
All right.
But it deserves to be treated, and we'll probably have to do it next week.
All right, so we will be here next week to wrap up the rest of the Bolshevik Revolution in Spain, and maybe we can talk about the coming Bolshevik Revolution in America.
Well, we might want to talk about the I know we really have to cover in this series, we have to discuss the French Revolution.
Mm. Because that ties it all in together.
A. Ralph Epperson and Nesta Webster will both help us tremendously with that. And that does tie a lot of it together. However, William Guy, and we might want to go back to chapter 16 of William Guy Carr later on and discuss his viewpoint of the build-up to World War II.
All right.
Which is the last chapter of.
So contrary to popular opinion, Hitler was not preparing for an aggressive war to dominate the world. If he was doing that, why did he have a minuscule navy that was barely fit to defend Germany's coasts, let alone challenge the Royal Navy? How come he didn't have four-engine strategic bombers like America had, like the Soviet Union had? The Soviet Air Force was structured almost entirely for offense. We've already covered that with William Guy Carr, haven't we?
Yes, absolutely.
And the Soviets were probably, if they would have gotten Spain, soon thereafter they would have gotten France, and then they would have had Germany totally encircled. As it was, though, I think they already culturally had France. France has been a degenerate country for 200 years, at least.
Well, France was a degenerate country, and in the 1930s it had
Leon
a very liberal government under a Jew named Leon Blum.
I think that's because a large portion of the French population is miscegenated. They're mongrelized with Moors, Arabs, Turks, whoever, Jews. There are almost a million Jews in France today, I believe.
And a large number of Moors came in from in the years after the French Revolution.
Hmm. So a lot of people in southern and central France are highly suspect, or at least they should be held as highly suspect. We'll have to get into that with the French Revolution, since that is basically, in the modern era, it's the opening salvo against our race, against our Western civilization. France, I think, was their trial run when they first overthrew a traditional monarchy with an entrenched nobility and a population that was basically agrarian, farming-based, and they got them to enslave themselves and put the power into the hands of the Illuminati, the Jewish Masons, and everybody, basically, that wanted to dominate them.
Yes, it is. The French Revolution is an important It's a pivotal point in the destruction of Christian society.
Had the French Revolution been snuffed out, strangled in the cradle, we probably would not have had a Bolshevik Revolution, dare I say that. We certainly wouldn't have had the revolutions of 1848. They probably would have bided their time and tried something again elsewhere at a later date. But the French Revolution emboldened them. And then that's right thereafter, they tried it in all throughout Europe in 1848. They had the Paris Commune at some later point. Was that in 1848 as well, the Paris Commune?
It was later. I don't know exactly what year. I would have to look at that.
Do you want to get into 1848, the Paris Commune, and all the other revolts, assassinations, and anarchist movements?
Well, it's all, you know, where we could highlight that it's the work of the so-called Illuminati. It's the work of international Jewry against Christianity.
Mm-hmm.
And it's all contributed to the demise of Christian society.
And I've been reading through on Wikipedia about assassinated nobles and royals and monarchs. And I read about one, an archduchess, a princess, who was assassinated in Switzerland by some Italian. And they listed him as an Italian, but I looked at him, and he looks hideous. He looks like he just got off the boat from Haifa. And he remarked that he wanted to kill a royal, and one was as good as the next. When they asked him, you know, who he originally wanted to kill and why he ended up stabbing her to death, he said that he wanted to kill the heir, I think, to Austria-Hungary or Prussia. They weren't around. He saw her, and he decided to just stab her. And he said, one royal is as good as the next. That sounds like a Jew.
It sounds like a terminally ill Jew who was promised his family would be taken care of or something. I can't imagine. It's satanic, that's for sure.
And they hanged him several days later, I think. Or I think they put him in prison, then they burned his memoirs, and then he either hanged himself or they hanged him. But I'm sure he didn't have anything interesting to say anyway, so we don't need to read his memoirs. But just incidents like that, I think most people in this country cannot conceive of how violent Europe was in the 19th century and how Europe was subjected to basically a reign of anarchistic Jewish terror. People couldn't walk the streets in some cities because they didn't know if a bomb was about to go off and somebody was going to shout about the proletarian rights. The only thing communism has liberated people from is their private property and their lives.
Right, and Americans, the average American is totally oblivious to the Jewish treachery, the history of Jewish treachery in Europe.
And they're planning similar things in this country.
Well, right, but we keep, you know, we're being raped and we're still enjoying it, so I guess they don't need those tactics here.
Since America's compliant.
Right.
We don't have a Franco, a Mussolini, a Hitler. We don't have any genuine patriots that rise up and say, you've gone far enough, no further. In fact, we're pushing you back. You know, I basically told my dad the last person we had that stood up to the Jews in a big way in terms of a politician was Andrew Jackson, and he killed the Bank of the United States, and he said, you den of vipers, I will rout you out, and they tried to shoot him for it.
Right, and I think they can, and they did try to shoot him for it, and two pistols misfired. Which is to me, it's absolutely the work of Yahweh to spare Andrew Jackson. And I think that Kennedy probably wanted to stand up to them and knew what was going on, and certainly revealed that he knew what he was going on, that he knew what was going on, and they killed him for it.
When Kennedy gave the speech about how secret societies have no place in a republic such as America, he was talking about them.
Absolutely.
But he couldn't openly come out and say Jew at that point. He was basically teaching in a parable.
And for some reason they had Reagan shot, but I don't believe that Hinckley was just some lone nut. However, he did everything they wanted him to.
Who, Reagan?
Absolutely.
Well, he was their best asset, I think. He passed himself off as a conservative, but he was nothing but a wolf in the clothing of a sheep.
Absolutely. Open borders, trade
amnesty.
With China, amnesty for Mexico.
Gun control.
He did everything they wanted him to. He was no conservative.
He was a moral pygmy. I think Reagan's one of the worst presidents in American history, and when I say that, NRA people get offended, conservatives get offended, so-called conservatives, I should say, the neocon kosher conservatives, they say that Reagan was basically they almost think that Reagan's the second begotten son of God.
He was nothing but another Hollywood actor and a communist.
He was a great actor.
Absolutely, he was a great actor.
He acted as though he cared about the American people.
Even 30 years after he died, people think he's the great conservative.
He was a shill. Just a fraud and a hoaxer.
Okay.
Right.
I will praise Yahweh and God bless, and I will see you next week.
See you next week. Yahweh bless.